Welcome to the True Blue LA podcast. I'm Jacob Birch, and Eric Steven has a Cody Bellinger pace update.
Hello. Our good friend, Cody Bellinger, he homered on Sunday. He actually had three home runs last week. He went had a little streak where he wasn't hitting home runs, so he kind of fell off his earlier pace, but he has 17 on the season. I think he's one behind Christian Yelich for the lead. But he's on pace as of now for 57 home runs and 149 RBIs. So good for Bellinger. And he's actually still hitting he's hitting .405 still. So, and his on-base percentage is .485. It's still like nearing .500, which is ridiculous for being this late in the season. But, having quite the season still.
Have you done any, like, look back in history on how long since, you know, Ted Williams era, a hitter has either hit 400 or on base for 480 or whatever?
Yeah, so there, this is really difficult to do in the play index, I think, but I was looking up, I saw a tweet, I want to say it was, like, over the weekend at some point, and I think it said the last player to hit 400 this many games deep into the season was Manny Ramirez in like 2001.
That sounds right.
So like, yeah. So I think I'll look it up at some point. But it's rare. Like, you know, to be this 400 this late. Like, I'd have to look this up too. I think John Olerud, I think he hit 363 when he was really young with the Blue Jays, and at some point, like late in, like I want to say June or July, he was at 400. So I think that was like the last. I know Tony Gwynn hit 394, but he was like he wasn't over 400. Like he was like he got to 400, but at some point in April, and I think maybe it was early May or late April that he fell under 400. And he was playing catch up the rest of the way, but still, that's it's ridiculous to hit 400. Basically, is what the point is.
This is a pretty lighthearted podcast, but we do have a very serious matter to talk about this week. Julio Urias was arrested for domestic battery last Monday. Since then, the Dodgers and Major League Baseball have placed him on administrative leave, but early reports suggest there are multiple eyewitnesses and video evidence. So it's looking like this occurred, and if that's the case, I think I can speak for the both of us when I say I never want to see him pitch for the Dodgers again.
Yeah, this is one of those things where, you know, like we watch sports and it's like a, you know, it's a diversion from like real life, and we root for players and teams, and something like this happens, and it really like I don't want to like dismiss like the gravity of it, but it's a bummer. Not that that's the main thing of this, but from a fan standpoint, it sucks. Like there's nothing good out of it because of, you know, a player that, you know, people root for, like now has done this or is in this situation. But the worst of all, that like there's a victim here, obviously, and that person should be thought of like first and foremost. And it's bad that this domestic violence ever happens. And just to clarify though, so here I guess the MLB now has a domestic violence policy where like you don't need to be like. It's not a court of law, right? It's you don't need to be like convicted, but if there's like enough evidence that they have rights to like suspend you, it's collectively bargained with the Players Association. The Dodgers are actually not really involved in this, so much that it's MLB like conducting the investigation. Obviously, there's like Urias was, this was last week, so Monday night, I guess. He was arrested. He spent the night in jail and then was released on $20,000 bond. I don't know what's going to come of this, like from a criminal standpoint, but it, you know, the reports seem to say that the woman he was with didn't really I didn't want to press charges, but there's a video involved, so it could have been, you know, if that ever comes out, I'm sure that's where the sort of the tide will turn if there's any support for Urias and it's a bad video. We've seen this with the NFL in situations where it's very violent, and obviously that's not that it's it. You shouldn't need a video to sort of to, you know, form an opinion, but just it's just a terrible situation all around. We don't really know, but as of now, so the procedural thing from the Dodger standpoint is that MLB placed Urias on administrative leave. So like as of now, he's like still getting paid, but he's not on the roster anymore. It's basically this. It's similar to like the restricted list where you're just like you're just suspended. You're not really suspended, but you're just in the in like purgatory almost, sort of waiting for the investigation to happen. The policy has been in place, I think, like 4 years, I want to say, with MLB. I did some looking back. The most high-profile current case is Addison Russell with the Cubs. He ended up getting 40 games from MLB, and it bled into this season. Roberto Osuna was through a more of a criminal process. He got 75 games. Who knows what's going to come of this, but I think at a minimum, we could see like Stephen Wright last year got into an altercation with his wife, or maybe his girlfriend, I don't remember. Jurys Familia, similarly, in 2017. They both got 15 games. So I think at a minimum, that's what Urias is looking at. But what you mentioned too about Urias, you know, not pitching for the Dodgers, Mark Walter especially, has been like outspoken against this because, you know, when the Roberto Osuna thing happened, he got traded to the Astros, and like his first game back after his suspension was at Dodger Stadium. So there was a lot of questions going around, and Walter was like very adamant, like we don't accept that here. It's a zero tolerance. But like you know, the Astros had a weird thing where they were like, hey, we're zero tolerance, but you know, but we traded for Osuna, so we're going to make sure he doesn't do anything again and that kind of thing. But so it's not really zero tolerance. So you wonder if it's lip service when you only see what happens when it happens to your team. Right. So we'll see if he backs up those words, depending on what the evidence is.
And the Dodgers have ran into this once when the deal for Chapman was in place, the news came out and then the deal didn't happen. Now, obviously that's a slightly different situation because they didn't have to do anything. They just had to not do something. And this isn't a situation where, regardless of how many games suspended, if they find just cause to suspend him really for anything, if you can get punished for domestic violence, I really don't want you pitching on the Dodgers, period.
Right.
So now they have to do something and lose value in the team. And I really, really, really hope the Dodgers do that because it just puts an asterisk on me enjoying this the whole team for the rest of the year. And that, as you put it, sucks.
Right. And I don't want to sound cold at all on this, but like just looking at it from the team standpoint, like Urias, right. He has, I should have had this in front of me. Something, you know, at least what, 4 more years after 2019 of like, and until he's a free agent. He had just over a year and 123 days. So he's going to be in the 2 year range, of service time at the end of the season. And so that means he has 4 more years until free agency. So if you decide, if you're like taking a principled stand and you're like, I'm not going to have any domestic violence abusers on the team, and you just flat out release him or trade him or whatever. Like if you trade him, I mean, this again, not wanting to sound cold, like you're trying to get something back, but are you really taking a stand? You're just dumping him. But if you release him, that's you're like, look, zero tolerance, but then also you don't get anything for it. So this is a very, very high wire, difficult situation. And so on one hand too, like it's terrible. Domestic violence is terrible. And the punishment, whatever, like criminally, from MLB standpoint, there should be consequences for this. So like, and they should be harsh enough to where it's discouraged from ever happening again. So like, I'm fine with like, you know, whatever like punishment MLB wants to dole out. And it honestly probably could be harsher. The only thing, there was an article a few years ago on Baseball Prospectus, Rachel McDaniel, I believe, wrote it. I'll link it in the show notes, but very good, well-reasoned piece where how Basically, the these league policies, NFL, MLB, etc., they don't focus on the victim, right? So, like, so when you ban a player, like I think it was one of the punter on the Giants, I think Josh Brown, he was basically let go, but then the point was like his wife, who was like the victim in this case, there was fear that now he's lost his livelihood. It's only going to make him like angrier, and like it doesn't. It's not a good situation. It puts her in more danger. In some cases, there's a very good article. I don't want to like just summarize it just from memory here, but the point is like I think the victims in domestic violence cases aren't really thought of as much, and everyone's obviously thinking about Julio Urias as a baseball player, as a pitcher. But if he is someone who sort of did this, then there has to be consequences. And now we just kind of have to wait. Like, I don't know how long it's going to take the investigation. I would imagine within the next few weeks, we'll probably know. If I had to guess, like, I don't know if Urias is ever going to pitch for the Dodgers again. He might, but it's one of those things where it's easy to take a principled stand when you don't have to make a choice. But now the Dodgers do have that choice. So, we'll see how it goes.
I really, really hope they make the right one.
Yep.
And I guess we have to talk about other baseball, much, much less serious stuff. good baseball things. Hyunjin Ryu is out of his mind this season so far.
He's all right. So the weird thing about the like five game week now, the Dodgers had a two off day week last week and another one this week, so they only played five games. So that meant Hyunjin Ryu and most of the staff, they got like extra rest. Ryu pitched last Sunday and then he didn't pitch again till Sunday. So like it was, and he just kept doing what he's been doing. He pitched seven more scoreless innings against the Reds. He's up to 31 straight scoreless innings. He's down to a 1.52 ERA on the season. He did walk another batter, so I don't know if we really should be praising him that much, but he's doing ridiculously well. So it's been like really amazing to see. Like we talked about this, like his comeback to me, like in 2017, after missing like basically 2 years, he had one start in 2016, but his comeback in 2017 was so good that like, and he was just like an average-ish starter. He was left off the postseason roster that year, but for him to even do that was good to see, because it was like, all right, cool, you've overcome the surgery. But like since then, he's been this like lights out. Obviously, he missed like 3 months with a groin injury last year. He missed about 10 days this year.
What was that groin injury?
Yeah. His groin was torn off the bone. Like
we joked about this. That was like a rookie of the year injury. He has like a super groin now.
Right. Yeah.
He just lets him pitch like a superstar.
So yeah, are you saying yeah? So he has amazing leg power. I see you're saying. But it's ridiculous. He has the best ERA in baseball since the beginning of last year, 1.78. Now, like I said, he's missed, you know, a lot of time, so it's just take what you can get. But if they're going to, I'm sure, like, you know, somewhat manage his innings, they just want him, as long as he's healthy for October, then they have to be happy with having him start, like, game one or two of a series. So that's really good.
Arguably not the best start last week, Kenta Maeda. What, like, we were worried if he was going to keep doing this good start, bad start thing. And with his first two good starts in a row, it was phenomenal.
Yeah. He had a very interesting game on Wednesday against Padres. He pitched into the seventh. He didn't give up a run. The Dodgers had a streak where they had, like, five shutouts in nine games. They almost had a sixth in 11 games on Sunday, and it was – it was an 8-0 game until the ninth, and then Yimi Garcia gave up three runs, so ruined that little moment. But yeah, Maeda was awesome, but he struck out 12. His career high is 13. But the cool part about this for me was like he also drove in both runs with a single. The Dodgers won 2-0. So, like, I looked up. There's, like, five games ever in Dodger history where a pitcher has struck out at least 12 and driven in two. And so the last one – wait, can you guess who the last – did you see my tweet? Can you guess who the last one is?
I don't think I saw your tweet. I don't think I can guess.
It was Brad Penny in 2007.
Let's see if you had just said the last one was Kershaw, I was like, okay, I'm just gonna guess Kershaw. The fact that you asked me, I'm like, oh no, it's some bizarre name I'm never gonna guess. I had a Brad Penny jersey though. I should have guessed Brad Penny.
Oh man, that's crazy. I remember Brad Penny, like, he turned out to be like kind of a dick, like,
yeah.
I think Ned Colletti wrote in his book that he basically quit on the team, I think in 07. Forgot what, maybe it was 07 or 8. But yeah, he was bad. But when the Dodgers traded for him in the just deal that was hated at the time, the LaDuca to the Marlins deal, because the Dodgers didn't have like an ace basically starting pitcher, and Penny sort of gave him that, but then he got hurt. But I remember his first game, that trade was so hated that my family had like a family reunion around that time, and we went to a Dodgers Pirates game, I believe, and it was Penny's first start as a Dodger. He went like 8 scoreless and gave up 2 hits, and he was getting booed, like, because he wasn't Paul LaDuca. Like, they dare traded franchise icon Paul LaDuca. That, what a dumb time it was to be a Dodger fan at that time. It was very weird. But yeah, so the three other people, and Penny struck out 14 in that game, by the way. The three other people with the 12K and 2 RBI games were all Hall of Famers. Koufax did it in 65. Drysdale, of course, did it in 64. And Dazzy Vance in 1925. Dazzy Vance had the most fun game of that. He actually pitched 10 innings, because why not? And he struck out 17 and drove in 3. So, hell of a game for Dazzy Vance.
So this podcast is going to turn off to me listing Dodger starting pitchers and you talking about how great they are. Rich Hill.
Yeah, he was all right. Before the Maeda game Wednesday, the Dodgers had played, I think, 44 games, and they had one double-digit strikeout game. It was Hyunjin Ryu, because he's been the best so far. That was in April, I think. But then in the span of 2 games, Maeda struck out 12, and then Rich Hill, who's also been sort of like, you know, mixture of off and on. He's only started 4 games now, but he was awesome Friday night in Cincinnati. He went 6 scoreless, struck out 10. I think he gave up 2 singles. And so they're like on fire. So it was just sort of a part of a sort of a great week and part of a great month, almost great season for Dodgers starting pitching. They just keep getting better and better. But yeah, like it's Rich Hill, like, you know, had a good game. So it was good to see another funny Rich Hill moment. This morning, a bunch of people were tweeting out, it's the 13th anniversary of the infamous Michael Barrett, AJ Pierzynski, Cubs White Sox brawl. Mm-hmm. AJ Pierzynski, one of the more hated teammates ever. I know a lot of teammates love him, but he was very divisive. But anyway, they got into a collision at home plate, and then Barrett got up and slugged Pierzynski in the face, and it started this massive brawl. But little known to me, and as I was watching the video, Rich Hill was the pitcher on the mound on that play, and he like reached over and got the ball, like, because he was behind home plate covering. But yeah, that was 13 years ago. Rich Hill was 26 at the time. So weird.
In the first, and I mentioned this last week, over the first few weeks of the season, we were a little worried about the rotation. And then Kershaw came back from injury. Hill came back from injury. And that sort of, even oddly enough, even though those aren't the pitchers we're talking about this week, that did help really stabilize everything. How good is this rotation so far? I think you have maybe some stats for me.
Yeah, I did some looking up. So it is, you're right. Like, basically, like, getting Kershaw back first, that was like the first like stabilizer. But they had that nightmare week where you jinxed them by going to a game in St. Louis, and they got swept in St. Louis, and then they went home and lost the first 2 to Milwaukee. So they lost like 6 straight. And this was after their 8-2 start. So they went from 8-2 to 8-8, like in a heartbeat. And they were, you know, kind of reeling. And the starting pitching that week was terrible. Like, it was, I forgot the exact numbers, but it was something like I think I want to say like 25 innings, 25 runs or something like that, crazy from the start. That was the week Ryu got hurt. He left a game in the second inning because of his groin injury. He ended up only missing like 10 games. But that Sunday when they snapped the winning streak or snapped the losing streak, Ross Stripling, he went like 8 strong innings and then Kershaw was back the next day. So that sort of set the ball in motion. So since that 6-game losing streak, Dodgers starting pitching has a 2.41 ERA and they're averaging a tick under 6 innings of starts, 5.95, which is very, very good as a team. And the Dodgers are 23-9 since then, so it gives you an idea of how sort of good they've been. But I was looking at this morning, on Baseball Reference, if you go to the team page and you go down to the pitching, it separates like starters and relievers and then extra guys that they don't really know how to classify. Mm-hmm. But there's basically been like Urias is down there in the other because he started and relieved. But there's 7 basically starters. Caleb Ferguson spot started a bullpen game, so that doesn't really count. But if you look at the 7 starters, like Ryu is 1.52, and every other person who started has an ERA in the 3s. So like just if you just glance at that, like first glance, like you could tell that's like an awesome staff, right? Like as a team, there's no like real weak spot necessarily. And like Walker Buehler at 3.83 is the worst. So like that gives you an idea how good like the Dodgers pitching has been, like because he's been better of late. And he's probably going to be lower than that, I'm sure, over the course of the season. So the fact that he's been the worst, like that, you could live with that, like any day of the week. But just I'll give you some more numbers. So on the season, Dodgers starting pitching, 2nd in ERA in baseball, 2.99, 4th in FIP, 3.56, 2nd in walk rate. They've only walked 5.8%. I don't think the Dodgers at the moment have more. Their rate is like almost first. I think it's like first or second in both. But they walked more as batters than any other team, and they've walked fewer as pitchers than any other team. So they're like dominating on both ends of that.
And that spells this Dodger team over the last 4 or 5 years for sure.
Yeah. And exactly now it's just like to the extreme, like they like Vanilla Ice. they're just getting the best of both worlds in that case. So they're really commanding the strike zone on both sides. But they're like, I think they're 7th in strikeout rate. But if you go, Fangraphs has a instead of strikeout to walk ratio, it's walk rate minus. I mean, strikeout rate minus walk rate gives you a better idea of like the dominance a little bit. And they're 3rd in that. So very good. They're actually 1st in the league in innings pitched per start. I would not have expected that, like just given how aggressive like Dave Roberts is and they always have an 8-man bullpen, usually sometimes 9. And, they are very aggressive in going to the bullpen. And like, so the fact that they're like getting innings from their starters, they're 5.77 gives you an idea of how the league has sort of evolved over the last few years where teams are using bullpens more and more. But I saw this yesterday and I was stunned by it. If you look at the MLB leaders, like from an individual standpoint in innings per start, because I just wanted to see where Ryu fit, because he was like 6.5 or something in my head. I was looking this up. Ryu is 2nd in baseball. He's averaged 6.59 innings per start. You know, a few years, as early as a few years ago, the leaders in this are always like 7 and above. Kershaw, for the most part, averaged like 7 plus innings for like a good like 4 or 5 year run. You know, basically he was in that range. Mm-hmm. But like now, 1st in MLB, Clayton Kershaw, 6.61. He's only made 6 starts, but like the Baseball Reference like leaderboard there, it has a minimum of 5 starts. But that I was shocked at that they're like 1 and 2 in baseball in innings per start. Like there's a bunch of guys that write at like 6.5, so it's really bunched up. But the fact that they're like averaging more innings than anyone else, that shows you how we've talked about this too. Like if the bullpen has struggled a lot at times, but like them going more innings than any other team, like it takes the load off the bullpen. Like they only played 5 games last week. No reliever pitched more than twice. So like they're rested. They're going to be more effective when they're rested. So it's been like a sort of a multiplier effect. The other thing I know a couple podcasts ago, I had sort of a defense of quality starts, just not as like the greatest stat in the world, but it has a nice little, a quick show of like, you know, pitcher did his job to keep the team in the game, even at a minimum, if it's like six innings and three runs. The Dodgers are second in quality starts, 25. It's just like 52% of their games. The league average is 38%. So, again, not the end-all, be-all stat, but they're better than average at their starting pitchers, giving them a chance to win. And I think that's been helping them quite a bit.
We mentioned the weird five-game week both last week and this week. It also lets the Dodgers, who are infamous at this point for sort of their creative roster use, to make a few creative roster uses. Kenta Maeda is on the, you say DL in your notes, but IL. Should we be concerned about this injury? I saw the news and I immediately thought it was contusion, a knee contusion.
So, yeah, it's a left adductor contusion.
Uh-huh.
I tweeted a joke about this. Like, I looked up on WebMD and it said that the definition was need only four starters next week. And then I had a picture attached to it and it was just the Dodgers schedule, which showed four off days. And that's all this is. Like, Maeda was asked about it when they hit the road and he's like, oh, because everyone was like, I think Bill Plunkett was like, does this hurt more or worse than when you went on the DL last year with your, and I think he used like air quotes or whatever injury it was. And he's like, no fake, you know, and then like, they kind of played it off, you know? But like, this is clearly we have all these off days. We're going to do this to everybody. Maybe not Kershaw, but like, you're going to get your rest at some point. So it was weird that it happened right after like a really great start. But like, I understand it. Like, they did that to him a couple years ago when he went like 8 2/3 or something. And like, everyone knew, I remember that being there because that was a home game. And everyone knew like that night that he was going to probably hit the DL. And I think he was asked about it in the post game. And the look on his face was like, what? Like not that it wasn't so blatant that it was like, well, you're clearly going on the DL. But it was more like, I forgot how it was asked, but I just remember his face being like, oh, okay. And then like, it didn't register or something. And then he was on the DL the next day. And then, it was so obvious. And I think this is another case of that, but like, so he is eligible to start as early as next Sunday. I would imagine it's either that or the Memorial Day, he's going to be activated like within a minimum time. So this is nothing to worry about, in my opinion. But yeah, so I think he'll be back immediately.
You talked a little bit about the corresponding moves that the Dodgers were allowed to make by, among other things, putting Maeda on the IL.
Oh yeah, so this sort of weird off day maneuver, or you know, off time with off days, it gives them now a chance because they only have the four starters active. They still have the 8-man bullpen, but now it gives them like a full bench. We talked about last week where Rocky Gale was up and we're like, why, you know, like, cause it didn't, are you really going to go to Rocky Gale to pinch hit? Like, but then, so he was basically, Matt Beatty was called up, for the weekend series in Cincinnati. And like, he could have been up as early as Wednesday, but then the Dodgers like didn't, they called him up. It was basically one game later than he could have been. Cause he had to be down in the minors for 10 days. So that was sort of as expected. But then they added Kyle Garlick. He got a pinch hitting appearance on Sunday. He flew out. But so it gives them now like a full bench for probably another week because they have another five game schedule this week with two more off days. So like I said, Maeda at the earliest will be up Sunday. But I would imagine Garlick gets the call to go back down when that happens, but Sunday or Monday, it's probably going to happen with this. So they'll have a full bench for another week, but you're right. In the notes, I did put DL because that's force of habit. Injured list, I have no problem remembering or saying other than disabled list, you know, mm-hmm. But for some reason I can't say IL. Yeah. Like I don't know why, like it doesn't make any sense. Like I just can't do it. It's weird.
We're going to swap things up. We're going to do the rewind first and then questions. But speaking of roster moves, I guess, I know you wanted to talk about a very old friend, Edwin Jackson.
Yeah, so Edwin Jackson, longtime old friend, I guess, he made his debut with the Dodgers in 03, you know, was famously sort of traded to Andrew Friedman and the Rays in a few of those deals where the, let's say, the Dodgers came a bit on the short end. Edwin Jackson sort of bounced around over the years. He was on a minor league deal with the A's this year, and then he about 2 weeks ago, maybe a little over a week ago, he got traded to the Blue Jays, and with the expectation that he was going to join their major league team. So that set a major league record because Edwin Jackson has now pitched for 14 teams. Octavio Dotel had the old record, 13. Jackson and Dotel were teammates on the 2011 Cardinals. Both were trading deadline acquisitions, so they helped him win the World Series that year. I wrote a little bit about Jackson for SB Nation last week, but I'm always amazed at these guys who pitch like for everyone, you know. And the fact that Edwin Jackson is like, if he just goes to one more team, he'll have literally pitched for half the league, which is ridiculous because there's 30 teams. But he's – and the funny thing too, like, so each of the last 5 years now, in 2014, he pitched with the Cubs, mostly in relief, and he was there for the entire season. That's rare for him now because each of the last 5 years, he's pitched for two franchises every year. So, like, he'll get dealt at some point. And you've got to figure with the Blue Jays, like, they're not in it. Like, if he is anything, he was actually really good for the A's last year. If he shows anything, I would imagine he's probably going to get traded again at the trade deadline. So we could have a 15th team. Then again, odds are a team that gets him, he's probably pitched for them before. Yep. So that's the real issue here. He's pitched in 35 different ballparks, which is amazing. Again, there are 30 teams. I just thought it was cool that he set a major league record. I hope he continues. He's only 35. Like, he doesn't turn 36 till December. So I hope he pitches for like 10 more teams, and he pitches, you know, pitches as long as he wants. But that's great. Another thing I just wanted to bring up earlier, I had the person wrong. I was going off the top of my head. I apologize for that. The article about domestic violence was from Diana Moskowitz from Deadspin. I don't know what I was thinking about Rachel McDaniel Baseball Perspective. She had something different over the weekend. It was not related to this, so I apologize for the mix-up. But I will link this in the show notes.
Well, I've got a bunch of questions, but I think you wanted to do the rewind first.
Yeah. This week is a little more, this is what I was hoping Dodger Rewind would be, just try to get inspired by stuff that's happening over the week. Because Ryu was doing so well, and then the Edwin Jackson thing ties us all together. Bob Miller is this week's, Dodgers Rewind. He pitched for, an Edwin Jackson, like 10 teams in his 17-year career. From 1957 to 1974. He was with the Dodgers from 63 to 67 for 5 years. He actually pitched for three teams that went to the World Series and two that won it. He did not pitch in the 63 World Series, but he pitched some mop-up duty and relief in 65, 66. He was a starter in like 1963, but like sort of a swing man. He would start some and relieve some. And that was the days when they really only had four starters, but he was fourth on the team in starts. He started 24 games. So it was Drysdale, Koufax, and Johnny Padres, and then Bob Miller. But then the rest of the time he was basically a reliever. And 5 years, four of those years, he had sub-3 ERA. He was really effective. He pitched in 74 games in 1964. It doesn't sound like a lot now, but that was an NL record at the time. Sort of the reason that I brought him up is Ryu is at a 31 inning scoreless streak right now. And I was looking up Dodgers sort of scoreless streaks, and there's, I think it was the 12th to hit at least 30 with the LA Dodgers. Don Newcomb had a 39 inning and a 31 inning back in Brooklyn. I don't know all the Brooklyn streaks, but I know those two. But Bob Miller was the sort of other name that came up. There's a lot, you know, Oral Hershiser, Kershaw, Zach Greinke, Don Drysdale, all the ones you would think would have scoreless streaks. And I was like, who's Bob Miller? He had a 31 inning streak in 1964 that year that he had his sort of best year. It was over a span of 16 games. It's weird to have reliever streaks don't get a lot of fanfare because they're less heralded, you know, like it's not like a starter and someone's really like building toward it and you're only like an inning or two at a time. It was good. 31 innings. It was actually, the way streaks work for the most part, if someone scores in an inning, like it's not a scoreless inning. So like if you get two outs, you don't get credit for the 2/3. He actually got to like 31 and 2/3 before giving up a run in that 32nd inning or whatever. But he was later traded to the Twins with Johnny Roseboro and Ron Paranoski, two more famous Dodgers. And the Dodgers got Mudcat Grant and Zulio Versailles. So that was kind of a big deal. That was the end of 1967. But this was the funniest thing I thought. So the Dodgers got him from the Mets in a trade. So the Mets were an expansion team in 62. The Dodgers traded for him at the end of 1962, like in the offseason. So I was looking up his baseball reference, like Bullpen Wiki, has like a sort of a mini biography of him. It's pretty short. But I'm just going to read this to you verbatim. One of four major league players with the name Bob Miller. He roomed with another Bob Miller while with the Mets in 1962. He was nicknamed Righty at the time to distinguish him from the left-handed Bob Miller. Ironically, he bore a striking facial resemblance to another Bob Miller who pitched for the Phillies. So I love the fact that all these Bob Millers are roaming around. This is like in our generation's Bobby Joneses, I guess, who were teammates at one point on the Mets. But so that's Bob Miller. He was also the first pitching coach in Blue Jays history, 1977 to 79. So pretty nice little career he carved out. 17 years, that's pretty good. So that's this week's Dodgers Rewind.
I've got 6 questions for you, not from Craig, and 5 questions for you from Craig. You ready?
Ooh, that's a lot of questions.
It's a marathon. We're going to go. You ready?
Yeah.
Okay. I have 3 questions from Sissy Tran. I'm going to save one to the end because it is not baseball related. First off, what are the main talking points regarding changes to the non-waiver deadline? This happened over the offseason. Agreed. So it's way less weird, right?
Yeah. So they streamline it a little bit. This is what some of the changes are going through next season. Some are this season. One of the ones that they're this season was a trade deadline. Basically, what they did was eliminate the August 31st deal. So now there's only one trade deadline, July 31st. And that's the non-waiver trade deadline. It's the normal trade deadline that everyone watches, where you could trade anyone. You don't have to go through trade waivers. Anything after July 31st, players have to be placed on waivers before you could trade them. Now you cannot trade anyone after July 31st. So that's going to be some getting used to, but you could still put players on waivers and players can get claimed and things like that. But that's going to be interesting to see how this happens. Maybe they're trying to drum up more interest, get like all the trades out of the way in July 31st. The last few years, we've seen big trades in August. Like Justin Verlander was the immediate one that comes to mind in 2017. I don't remember what happened that year. You have to refresh me.
I don't understand why that's a big trade.
The Dodgers got Chase Elliott in August. They got Magic Merlin Anderson in 2006 in August.
There's another fairly big August trade. Obviously the big trade with Boston.
Oh right, yeah, that's right. Only the biggest trade in MLB history. It's like where the Dodgers took on like $270 million.
I just remember like following that trade on the car and going, there's no way they can pull this off in August.
Right.
One of these guys got to get claimed.
Yeah. The day that the news broke of that and the chronology of it was amazing. Greg Maddux, they got in August, one of the years, I believe. Maybe that's not right. Anyway.
He might have been. Like one year was a 31st and July 31st and one was in August.
Maybe the second one. So that's basically the difference. So from a functional standpoint, well, there's not going to be any trades after in August now. So that's a huge thing. But that's basically it. That's like the only change.
Next question. Relatedly, respective to where the season is at right now, what move or moves would you like to see the front office make this summer?
So I just looked it up. The 2008 trade was in August. They got him from the Padres. So I think, well, we talked about how, like, Dodgers starting pitching is really good. I don't know when A.J. Pollock's coming back, but I would imagine, and I know we'll get to that in a later question, but I would think the Dodgers might need, like, another bench player. Like, they picked up David Freese last year, that kind of a thing. When A.J. Pollock gets back, it makes it more tricky. But I think it's something they might look into. But the main thing, I think, obviously, is going to be reliever. Relief help in some form, I'm sure that's what they're going to target. And it could be as and that might not even be a trade, because the draft is coming up June 3rd to the 5th. And then after that, there's no qualifying offer penalty because, you know, if there's free agents out there. One's Dallas Keuchel, who's a starter, but not for the Dodgers' interest. It's probably more likely that, like, Craig Kimbrell, I don't know how likely they are to sign him, but that's just throwing it out as an option. But he's a free agent, and signing him would not cost a draft pick at that point if you wait till after the draft. So that could be an option, or just, you know, another reliever of some sort. I would imagine that has to be their target. And I don't know if they have to get a left-handed reliever. Maybe Tony Cingrani coming back soon will help that. Alexander, they seem to use him more as a loogie now these days. He's really pitched these short stints most of the season. So maybe they try to get a better lefty at some point, but who knows. But it has to be a reliever for me, one or two. That's going to be their target, I think.
Yeah, and it could even be a thing where we just see them trade for one or two earlier in the season and see how that works out. Early before the deadline, sort of early.
Yeah,
July.
Like they sort of incrementally add. Like they added Dylan Floro earlier last year, and he was mixed around a little bit. And so I think you're right. I think doesn't have to necessarily be at July 31st, but yeah, I think bullpen is where they have to upgrade.
Next question is from Michael Mendoza. Will the Dodgers make an attempt to land Max Scherzer if the Nationals put him on the trading block?
I have to say, I was so taken aback by this question because it never entered my mind. Like, I mean, I guess sure. Like, if the Nationals were like, hey, you know, we want to trade Max Scherzer, then who's not going to like listen to that, right? Like, but because the Nationals are terrible this year, they've like disappointed yet again. I don't think the Nationals are at a point where they would trade him, though. He still has 2 years left on his contract. It's pretty heavily backloaded, so that could be a problem. From a salary cap standpoint, it's still like $30 million a year, but I think he's earning like, I think, 45 the next 2 years, which is crazy. So that's probably enough of an impediment that it'll make trading for him difficult. But and also I just don't know if the Nationals would trade him like now, because like I'm sure they still think they can contend, if not this year, then at least next year and year after that. And having him atop the rotation is a main way to do that. So I don't see them trading him, and then the salary makes it a little more difficult for him to be traded. So very unlikely, in my opinion.
At the Adam Baum from Twitter, any potential trade targets the Dodgers are looking at, other than Max Scherzer, obviously, I'm looking at Amir Garrett and bringing back Howie Kendrick.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's too early at this point for rumors. Like, I'm not like
plugging
in
specific player rumors. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I haven't really seen much in terms of who they're targeting. I can tell you that I don't think the way Howie Kendrick's tenure in Los Angeles ended would lead itself to him coming back. He wasn't necessarily the biggest proponent of him not getting playing time, even though he had a really bad year at the plate in his last year, and they still. He still qualified for the batting title, if I'm not mistaken, or he played enough to where it was like you really can't complain about it, given how he played. And but he was willing. That said, he was a willing teammate playing out of position. He played in left field a lot after basically playing only second base for the most part. So I just don't see that as likely. But in terms of the other stuff, like, it's probably relief base, so that's who they're looking for.
Jason Martinez wants to know, what happens in center field when Pollock returns? Are we headed for another platoon situation?
I mean, look, it's the play will sort of dictate that. I know Dave Roberts earlier in the season when Pollock was struggling, and he said, look, he has a track record. We're not going to, like, platoon him. So Alex Verdugo keeps playing well. So he's probably going to earn more playing time. I guess it just depends. Like, depends when Pollock comes back, but
it depends what the team looks like then. This is one of those questions that we get right. A lot of times in spring training where magically things work themselves out. There's an injury somewhere else in the starting eight that means that because so many of the Dodgers pieces are movable, you just slightly shift things around and, oh, you're not platooning anymore.
I think, too, like, you're right. Like, last year the Dodgers were struggling to the point where they were, like, in a fight for the division, right? They had to, like, do something. That's when they started platooning because they gave the players a lot of rope, Bellinger included, and, like, a lot, and then they just weren't producing against, like, their own hand. And they went out and got David Fries. They got Brian Dozier. Dozier didn't really work out, but he still they were aggressive in doing that, and it worked. They hit lefties a lot better the last 2 months of the year. And again, they needed a playoff to win the division. So they were in a fight for their playoff lives last year. If like in a couple weeks, they're like still humming and playing well and Pollock comes back, they could probably ease him back in a little bit. So maybe it's more likely to get a platoon at that situation, but I don't think they're going to force it. But if push came to shove and it's like Pollock's not hitting, and they're not going to keep running him out there every day if they have like a productive Verdugo and they sitting there. So I think the play will determine that. But at the moment, if I had to guess, Pollock's going to get a little bit more rope. But then if push came to shove and they absolutely had to, if they're in a fight or something, that they would probably lean more toward platooning in that case.
And Sissy is back wanting to know, what is your and my favorite dim sum dish?
Do you want to go first on this?
I have a slam dunk pork bao.
Pork buns. Okay. I was going to say, so that was one. I actually have two, and that's one of my two pork buns, and then also xiao mai, which is basically just like a pork and shrimp dumpling or, you know, some variation of that. But yeah, there's so much good stuff at dim sum. Like I will pretty much try anything. I tried pork blood once in college. I did not like it at all. So I will not do that anymore. But other than that, I'll try just about anything. But I love dim sum. It's good.
A very timely question, as my wife had dim sum for the first time in her life yesterday.
My wife.
ABC Cafe in Kansas City. I didn't go. I was busy elsewhere. But she is a bigger fan of Chinese food than I am, so I was very glad that she got to have that really, really magical experience that is dim sum.
We talked a little bit about this before, but did she enjoy it? She had a good time?
She did, yeah. Her and her friends are already plotting their return trip, and I'll probably go for that one. I think I'll try to make sure I'm less busy when that happens.
That's awesome.
So next up, we have, as we tend to end these episodes with questions from Craig. You ready for the first one?
Sure.
At 31-17, the Dodgers are on a 500, that'd be really good, a 105 win pace. Only the 1962, 1974, and 2017 Dodgers have won 100 or more games. Simply, will this be the fourth, and how do you compare this team with the 2017 edition so far? I actually was going to talk about this a little bit earlier in the episode. Outside of this really hot start, this is starting to feel like that 2017 team where it's just like win a series, rely on really good home run hitting hitting and really good starting pitching and sort of mask a little bit of the bullpen issues going on. So I think it will. I think this is so far. I think it's looking a little bit better than the 2017 team, especially knowing that we have we have trades still left to make and early on in the season.
Yeah, and like that 2017 run was so crazy, like, because they were so good for like that run. They obviously had the losing streak in September, but they still won 104 games even with that. That's how crazy they were. But like literally Sports Illustrated was so carried away with how like crazy dominant the Dodgers were that they had the cover that said best team ever ? Like, turns out no, but like that team was nuts. Like, that said, like, this team is loaded. Like they have depth. Like last year they led the National League in runs scored and led the National League in fewest runs allowed. Like, they're close to that this year, but I think like they're just generally, they have a potential to be better. Like, I think they could be better than 2017, but I do think they're good enough to win 100 games. Like right now, Craig mentioned the pace they're ahead of that. It's hard to keep that pace up for the year. You could, any sort of long losing streak and you're kind of toast, but they're good enough. I think they're going to win. Like, before the season, I was thinking high 90s in their per win total, but they're certainly good enough to win 100 games, and it would not surprise me at all if they do.
Will Kyle Garlick or Matt Beattie be the next player to hit a home run for the Dodgers? I'll give one of you those two and anyone else on the current 25 master who has not hit a home run. And for the other person, you can get anyone else in the organization not currently on the 25-man roster. Who will you pick?
Oh God.
And if it was someone not in the organization, it is a draw.
So the next person to hit a home run for the Dodgers, like a new home run hitter. Let's think here. It's like, odds are it would probably be one of Beattie or Garlick, but I'm going to go off the reservation and say I'm going to go Will Smith.
Yeah, he stole my answer. I'll take Beattie. It's fine.
Yeah, I can see that.
That's fine. But I Will Smith was going to be my sleeper pick, so you stole it from me.
I'm happy.
Assuming that, you know, but that would be the end of the Rocky Gale era of the Dodgers, presumably.
Pretty much. Yeah, hopefully, I mean, for the
hopefully Barnes and Martin don't both get hurt, and we have the Smith Gale.
It would take like a Barnes injury, I think, most likely to get Smith up. A Martin injury could do it, because we saw last time where they sort of were forced to play Barnes a ton with Gale as the backup, but maybe they're more inclined to bring Smith up and go give Barnes a little bit more of a breather. But yeah, who knows?
Well, I'm excited for it to be Howie Kendrick anyways. So
exactly right.
Is it hard to pick flaws in this Dodger team? It is hard to pick flaws in this Dodger team, but at some point, do you put Taylor in at second against right-handed pitching and see how that goes, considering that it looks like Hernandez is not able to hit right-handed pitching this season?
Yeah, he struggled. He did better against him than normal last year. This year he's been really struggling at times. That, you know, he's still like just generally productive, but it's not to the point where he should start every day, I think. So that has to be a consideration.
The splits up against right-handed this season, he's 175, 236, 351. So no,
yeah, it's
OPS
not good.
586.
Like, so he's kind of rolling off of his early home runs, like, just overall. His OPS plus in the year is 87 at this point total. So yeah, and like, I don't know if Taylor's necessarily the option there, like but maybe that's a way to get Taylor more of a run. But Taylor hasn't like exactly excited either. So maybe that's a situation where it lets them get a little more creative in the outfield and maybe use either Freeze at first base or Matt Beattie at first base and Muncy at second, as bad defensively as that might be. You maybe live with that if the offense is still lacking. So I don't know. It's something to look at. But yeah, I don't know if they're there yet, but we'll see. I do think it warrants like some experimentation here, where if Kike still doesn't hit, then you sort of see what you got there and maneuver some guys around.
in small sample size noting, but Chris Taylor even worse against right-handed pitching, for instance.
Right.
And that's going to come up actually in the next question. Should Corey Seager be graded on a curve this year? He's coming back from two surgeries and he did not play much in spring training. At some point, do the Dodgers look to platoon him a bit against left-handed pitching? And I think we hinted at this last question. The Dodgers' infield depth isn't actually, middle infield especially, isn't that good. So yeah. Who else do you put there other than the guy that's proven to be a really, really good hitter, as mentioned, coming off two surgeries? So I don't think that's the case. Maybe if they think more rest is a solution to try and get him going, then sure, maybe you'll see sort of a mini platoon. But as a full-fledged platoon, I don't see it.
I don't see that until it'll be like a Bellinger situation last year. Until it would take until like August. Like if he's still not hitting them, you know, after the All-Star break or whatever, then they consider it. But he's going to get a lot of rope, and I think he's earned it.
It does make me wonder if a sort of utility middle infield player is another potential trade target at the deadline.
Yeah, certainly someone who could play up the middle. Like we, you know, Kike and Chris Taylor can both play short, but then it's like who plays second?
Plays second base? Howie Kendrick.
Wait a minute.
Ready for the last question?
Sure.
It's happy hour time. You and I are at Applebee's or something. Say we're in the middle of no. Say we have to do a chain restaurant. This is my question, not Greg's. Where do you and I go to happy hour? Say we're in Phoenix, Arizona, where there is no small business.
Oh.
That's a lie. I've been to plenty of good
ones. That's
true. But there are a lot of chain restaurants, so.
Let's say we wanted to catch a game, so we went to our good friends at Buffalo Wild Wings.
Okay, so we're there. We're ordering nachos. Do we get no meat, chicken, or beef?
Well, yeah, you don't get no meat because you're not a savage. so, actually, when it comes to that, like, I guess if we're at like a Mexican place or like if they have carne asada, we get carne asada.
Sure.
But otherwise, I'd probably get chicken at a restaurant. Like,
I agree.
But it's tough. Like the weird, like nachos can get really messy, and I think ground beef tends to get messier.
Greasier,
like chicken. Yeah, and so that's an issue. But I would lean toward chicken. But first choice of meat is always carne asada for nachos. So I think that's where I'd lie.
I think we're in agreement.
Nice. Wait, is that it?
That's it. That's all I got.
Well, I know what I'm gonna go get some carne asada nachos.
I am not because I'm in Kansas City.
Oh, I'm so hungry. I'm gonna get carne asada nachos and chicken nachos, and then I'll do a taste test.
Okay.
So.
You're not even going to bother with the no meat, I understand.
No, God. Anyway, have fun eating nachos this week, everybody. Enjoy the Dodgers' two off days, and we will see you next week when they have a relatively full schedule.